Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we all get from American politics. I'm Jonah. I'm an independent from Maryland.
I'm DJ. I'm a self-described economic conservative and self-confessed Republican from Suffolk, Virginia.
Hi, I'm Emily, a moderate Republican from Virginia.
And I'm Kevin, a moderate Democrat from Los Angeles.
And you guys can find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com, plus blogs and commentary. Like us on Facebook, of course, facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And then rating us and reviewing us on iTunes is fantastic and will make us love you forever and be in such a better mood about the presidential election, which is going just fantastically these days. How's everybody doing?
I'm holding up, but nervous.
Yeah?
Yeah, getting nervous.
So did everybody watch the debate?
Yes.
Yeah. My wife and I watched them both. We watched the GOP today and Democrats last night. So I think I'm raring to go.
Wow, you watched them out of order. Did they make sense that way?
Oh, it was confusing, but I pretended that the Democrats were a flashback. So.
the bombastic single payer candidate who wants to take complete control of the country and hurl it down the path into complete destruction. Yeah, he said a lot of things on Thursday, but at the end of the day. You do realize I was talking about the Republican debate, right? Everybody got that? But, you know, I think looking at what happened Thursday night, basically the top three, if you will, Trump, Cruz, and Rubio, they all did what they wanted to do, which means none of them really hurt each other. And so it's essentially status quo ante moving forward. Cruz is the slight favorite in Iowa. Trump is the larger favorite in New Hampshire, and Rubio was in a position, if he can make a move, where he can end up doing run around both of them. The question really is going to be, in my opinion, what happens over the next weeks in Iowa. This is usually the time where somebody makes a surge. It has to be now because it ain't going to be after February 1st. And the question is, can Rubio make that surge to give him some momentum going forward, or is it going to be somebody that none of us are talking about that then puts their imprint on New Hampshire and then goes down forward into Nevada and beyond? I actually think Trump is going to win South Carolina because South Carolina is a much more protectionist state than people realize, has a very big textile industry that has been hurt very badly, and the protectionist message does better there. So I think Trump has a built-in advantage. But the real race, I think, in my opinion, is on the Republican side, at least, is going to start in Nevada. But on the Democratic side, I'll actually let Kevin first talk about the Democratic debate before I chime in.
Okay. Well, my take on it, and I always like to let the listeners know that I happen to be a Hillary Clinton supporter, although I do like Bernie Sanders. I just think that she'd be the stronger candidate in the fall. I thought Hillary Clinton won the debate, although I didn't think it was by any means, a walk-away win or anything like that. You know how President Obama always calls campaign season silly season? I think that we're in a smaller microcosm of that right now, the last 2 weeks before the first caucus, which I think is idiot season. And I think that means anyone who tries to predict anything that's going to happen between now and then is going to come out looking like an idiot. You know, we can look at the polls and all project based on what the polls are telling us, but I have a feeling these polls are going to surprise us in many different ways. So I frankly have no idea what's going to happen in Iowa. And as you guys know, I've said in past weeks, I would not be surprised if Bernie Sanders wins Iowa, wins New Hampshire, and we're in a long, dirty slog to the Democratic convention.
Yeah. So Kevin, being a Hillary supporter, she was definitely more, I don't know if I want to say combative, but she's definitely assertive and took a lot towards Bernie. Mm-hmm. Do you like that strategy from her? Do you think she's at her best when she's fighting, or because of how much love Sanders has and how much support he has, do you think that's right for her to do?
Yeah, I do. First of all, I do think she's at her best when she's putting him on the defensive, and I thought he was on the defensive most of the debate. But just getting away from that, I spend a lot of time on Facebook in various political debate groups, so I'm immersed in this all day. And I see a lot of people that get very testy if she says anything about the history of his legislation, if she questions whether his single-payer program is feasible or not. You know, this is a campaign. People should be allowed to, in a civil way, attack the other person's policies and the other person's positions without people going, how dare you? Who the hell do you think you are saying something negative about Bernie Sanders? And by the way, that's true the other way as well. I don't think that these people should be gloves off and just talking about their vision of the future. They have to contrast themselves. So I see nothing wrong with it, and I don't understand why people are so up in arms that she's actually questioning whether his single-payer system would work or not.
Mm. Emily, how did you feel about Hillary's new tactic against Bernie?
Well, you know, I think the situation is this, is I truly think that Bernie is actually getting under her skin. I because, you know, obviously the youth thing, I think, really, really irks her, because the polls are saying that, you know, Bernie's beating her 2-1 with the youth vote. And I think that gets in her skin. But I think she came across with a confidence, with a hint of arrogance that I think people are I think they like that. I mean, if I were a Democrat, I think that I would really, really be endeared to her by the way she handled things.
I would say the thing that put a lot of people off toward Hillary was the perception that she was cold, and that she was tough, and that she was standoffish. Given the environment we're in now, I think voters are looking for that a little more than maybe they were looking for in the empathetic 1990s. So I think that actually becomes a strength on her side. One danger, I think, that I wasn't willing to say this before, but I think I am willing to say this now, is that for a very long time within the Democratic Party, and this is my perception because I'm outside the party, and Kevin, feel free to correct any mistake that I've made, because I'll probably make a few in just 5 minutes because I do that. The impression that I've been getting is that support for government monopoly healthcare has really been a tribal signal within large swaths of the Democratic Party. It's something that it's one of those things it's the way a lot of Democrats say, this shows that I'm a nice person, this shows that I care. It's like the old Hubert Humphrey line, when taxpayer money is spent on health, the people feel cleansed, absolved, and purified. But what Hillary is doing by actually going after it and attacking it directly is she's forcing a lot of Democrats, including I think a number of people who would be inclined to support her, to essentially say, you can choose me or you can choose this big marker of your identity, but you can't have both. I'm surprised that Hillary did that. And while I still think she's going to win the nomination, I think she made it a lot harder for herself by doing that. She went after the notion of government monopoly healthcare directly. She accused Bernie of wanting to take away private insurance. Last I checked, anywhere from 40% to 60% of Democrats would love to take away private insurance. I was stunned that she actually fell into what I think is a trap that Bernie Sanders laid for her. Kevin, what do you think?
Well, you're not going to be surprised. I do take a little bit of disagreement or a little bit of exception with a couple of the things you said. It's a question. It's not that you're wrong. It's a question of how you're describing it. See, I don't think she came out in favor of private health insurance, and I don't think she came out against the Democratic vision of universal coverage. What she said is very simply that we spent 2009 and 2010 in a bloody, knockdown, drag-out fight just to pass the ACA by the skin of its teeth. And for the last 6 or 7 years since then, we have been defending it against an onslaught, a never-ending onslaught of Republican attempts to either repeal it or just poison it in the minds of Americans. And so the idea that somewhere in the beginning or the middle of 2017, we would start that process again, but now asking for a more government-intrusive program with a House that is owned by the Republicans and a Senate that is either run by the Republicans or marginally has a Democratic majority but nowhere near the 60 votes you need to pass anything, It's absurd. And most of the Democrats that I know agree that it would be nice to have single-payer health care. Sure, it might be the ideal, but the reality is that we are nowhere near a political environment where it's anywhere realistic. So that's what she's saying. And by the way, I want to make one more point. You know, this has come down to, oh my God, Hillary Clinton is not in favor of single-payer health care. What kind of liberal is she? Let me remind everyone that the goal itself is not single payer. The goal is universal coverage at a reasonable cost. Single payer is one way to get there. And yes, my preference in a perfect world would be that we have a single payer system. But that's not the system that the Obama administration and the Congress at the time opted to put into place. We've now made an historic changeover from what we had to the ACA. I don't like to use the phrase Obamacare. And the idea that we would gut that now to try to go to a single-payer system, I agree with her and parenthetically with Ms. Chelsea Clinton. I agree with both of them that it's not a very smart or realistic way to go.
Funny yeah. You mentioned Chelsea Clinton. Just quickly, Jonah. The exact phrase from Chelsea Clinton, according to the NBC News, is reporting, Senator Sanders wants to dismantle Obamacare, dismantle CHIP, dismantle Medicare, and dismantle private insurance. Her daughter put it right on the table.
Okay, well, her daughter said private insurance, but that doesn't mean that she's pro-private insurance. What she's I'm just interpreting. I think what she's trying to say is that's not realistic in this political environment. And it's not. And by the way, their point was also they were accurate. I read the 2013, at least a summary of the bill. I didn't read the actual bill. But the summary of the bill does make it, you know, it does very much suggest that it would be up to the states to implement these Medicaid for all or Medicare for all programs. And come on, we've got 36 governors now who are balking at Medicaid that's paid for by the government. The idea that, you know, every state would go along with this program and not throw up roadblocks is absurd. Of course they would.
And that actually is something that those who use the single payer moniker actually don't get, is that in the two countries that genuinely have the closest thing to government monopoly healthcare, it's not actually single payer. It's in Great Britain, it's quadruple payer because each province has its own system. And in Canada, each province has its own system. And it's when you have federations, that's a sort of thing you have. And you're right that, and Kevin, you're absolutely right. And that is going to be something where, you know, the notion that Washington can somehow convince all of the states to do this. You're right. I agree from a policy perspective. I completely agree. It's just I'm not sure it is something that that voters in Democratic primaries really want to hear right now.
Well, I mean, you know, they have to hear reality. Jonah, you're a moderate independent who leans Democratic. What do you think?
So for me, in general, this debate and all the Democratic debates, I don't think there was ever really a clear winner. I think that both Hillary and Bernie really solidified who they were. They took some shots at the other, but nobody really won. I think this one was the same way. But for me, the thing that Hillary said that resonated the most for me was, do we really want to have this fight again? Right?
Exactly.
And I agree. Like, conceptually, there are probably 10 or 20 awesome healthcare plans that we could possibly have in a perfect world. But I'm fine with what we have. And let's just, like, try to fix it and tweak it and move on and deal with something else. And that for me, when I saw the stuff that Chelsea Clinton said, for me, that was, this plays into my stereotype of what the Clintons do, in that they'll send someone out there, and you can't criticize Chelsea because she's just a little girl. She's a little baby girl, and you can't get mad at her. Yeah, but
she's older than my wife.
Yeah, she's older than I am.
But no, she's just a little baby girl. She's a little baby. I think that it was completely disingenuous. And, you know, saying that Bernie Sanders wants to completely destroy a healthcare system doesn't take into account he would replace it with something.
They didn't say destroy. They said dismantle. Yeah. But that is technically correct.
Yeah,
the first step is dismantling those programs so that you could put single payer in place.
But I feel
I do have to say, if Kevin and Hillary Clinton and Hillary Clinton type Democrats, if they can't even get past the repeal notion of repeal and replace when Democrats do it, how can we expect them to be reasonable about any alternative we have to offer?
You can't.
So I don't know. Like it reminds me of Al Franken's line about you know, although technically correct, intellectually dishonest, because it implies something else, although is correct to the letter of the word. And he used to say that about Rush Limbaugh. So I don't know. Whenever the Clintons remind me of something Al Franken was saying about Rush Limbaugh, it makes me itch a little. So you know, my goal at the beginning of every presidential election season is to pick my favorite Republican and my favorite Democrat. And I've decided after this debate that I have my favorite Democrat.
Ooh, who
Martin
is it?
Martin O'Malley.
It's Martin O'Malley.
I didn't mean to jump on your punchline.
No, it's absolutely. I mean, I feel like there's something, and there's no way he's going to win. And I have no expectation that he's going to get anywhere. But I just came away from all of these debates saying, I can't really get behind either of those two. And now, in the general, it'll probably be a different story. But right now, I'll just have to say, well, you know, we all pick somebody at 5% sometime.
But, Jonah, don't you think it's just because he's the only alternative to those two? I mean, why Martin O'Malley? How did Martin O'Malley become one of the three potential standard bearers for the Democratic Party?
I think that, first of all, his resume is legitimate. He was a fine mayor and a fine governor, and he got stuff done.
That's what they said about Sarah Palin, by the way.
Well, but they were lying about her. No, but she was like a half-term governor,
right,
who quit to run, and he maxed out his time here in Maryland.
Right.
And he has a set of legitimate accomplishments, and you look at him on paper, and you're like, okay, this guy understands process. He understands management of a large, complex, crummy political system. So he could probably be the president and at least understand how the job works. And he's not super offensive, though on the other side, he's not super inspiring. And that's it, right? I mean, that's the core of it. Like, he's fine, but he's not getting anybody out in the streets, and he's not inspiring people to make viral videos or anything. So
can we talk about Martin O'Malley for a second? So
sure.
Does anyone else feel like – so he's polling 2% nationally. So does anybody else feel, just how I'm feeling right now, that they put him on stage to basically separate out the Sanders-Clinton argument? Because why else was he there?
What do you mean separate out?
I mean, just to have a little buffer in between their arguing.
No.
I mean, how boring would the debate be between the two of them?
No, I fundamentally disagree. I think it would be a better debate without him. I think he's there because Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Rance Priebus, neither of them have the cojones to say no to a politician who they want to be in the fold.
Oh, well, but the Republicans cut people. Like,
finally.
Fiorina and Rand Paul. Who else was gone?
Huckabee was on the
undercard.
The undercard. Yeah, that's not cutting. Yeah.
It is.
Undercard debates need to go.
Yeah, when were there undercard debates in any other presidential election? This is a new and a bad invention.
This is just like every child gets a trophy. That's what the undercard debate is.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't disagree. True. I mean,
it's half the reason Martin O'Malley is there, I think.
By the way, Emily, are you saying that my trophy for most improved Democrat on the podcast doesn't count for anything?
I'll take the fifth on that.
Okay, I'm sorry, DJ. Go ahead.
What may make O'Malley... Well, no, actually, I'm sorry. Nothing makes O'Malley interesting. I appreciate Jonah that you saw him govern Maryland. I also saw him govern Maryland. Admittedly, no, well, not entirely from afar, because I spend 3 days a week in Maryland now. This is still a guy whom the state seemed to like so much that when given a choice between his lieutenant governor and a Republican, the state elected put the Republican in his place.
Yeah,
I mean, a Republican has carried Maryland twice in 25 years One was George Bush the Elder. One was Bob Ehrlich. And now the third one was Larry Hogan.
Yeah, I said before, but Maryland is weird about this. We get two terms of a Democratic governor, and then the lieutenant governor loses. The Republicans serve one term, and then a new Democrat comes along for two terms. The lieutenant governor loses. A Republican serves one term. And so it's a weird pattern, and we'll see if it breaks. But that's what's been going on for a while now. Because the lieutenant governors are just sort of, I don't know. Michael Steele was lieutenant governor. So
yeah, and Emily, you care to comment on Michael Steele?
I'm going to leave him alone right now because he's on my list.
Oh, if only he was running. If only he was on the presidential debate stage. That would be amazing.
Don't you think we have enough duds?
Yeah. Well, so before we get away from the Democrats, DJ or Emily, was there one of the Democrats that you watched that you thought that one wouldn't be the worst?
I'm probably with Jonah. I Martin O'Malley's not a bad guy.
Each of them have something in their record that I could look and go, yeah, okay, that might be enough to make it tolerable. For all that we talk about Bernie and for all that we love to beat him up because he doesn't have anybody on this podcast, Bernie has been very consistent in opposing what I would call industrial corporatism. He's terrible in agricultural corporatism, but everybody's terrible in agricultural corporatism, including my guy, Marco Rubio. But on industrial corporatism, he has been very good. He does not like the Export-Import Bank. He was against the bank bailout in the first place. You know, we obviously disagree on a lot of things, but we do share that in common. Mrs. Clinton, you know, we've all watched Mrs. Clinton for about 20 to 25 years, and I think she is closer to the center than she would like people to believe. In some respects, the center has moved towards her over the last 20 years, in some ways good, in some ways not so good. I personally think her foreign policy would be more aggressive than the current administration, although she's trying to hide that. I get why. I do find it interesting, though, and I must say this as a Republican watching this for the general election. You know, the president's approval rating is still in the mid-40s. Maybe on a good day, it's in the upper 40s. And we now have the presumed nominee, and I still think Hillary is the favorite to win the nomination, basically nail herself to the Obama mast, if you will. And that will help her a great deal with certain demographics in the Democratic Party and in the Democratic primaries. I don't know how much that is necessarily going to help her in the general election. She will need to put some distance between herself and the president.
Right. Well, there's always that deal with the devil you have to make when you're running, which is what will you do to win the primaries and the nomination versus what do you need to do to position yourself for the general election campaign. I think before Sanders started to come on strong in Iowa, you know, she was somewhat supportive and said nice things about the Obama administration, but she clearly tethered herself to them last night. And I think that's because she's now more concerned that she needs to win the nomination. And she'll worry about untethering herself from them later on.
Yeah.
So I've got a fun fact really quick to drop on you, Kevin, so you can tell all your friends at your cocktail parties or whatnot.
My liberal elite cocktail parties? Okay.
Yes, those. I was reading up everything I could on Bernie, and Vermont is actually 49th to 50th in the United States for economic growth. So why would the Democrats want a nominee that really can't govern fiscally when he can't take care of his own state? Just a thought.
Good point, but I have another point.
How do you say thank God for Mississippi with a New England twang?
I mean, that's a great point, although I'm not sure that a senator can really be blamed for.
They have a Democratic governor. I mean,
Well, that talks to the Democratic Party, not necessarily to the competence of Bernie Sanders. You know, for me, it comes down to much more basic stuff, which is this socialist thing. I've been talking about this since June or July. My Democratic friends who are Sanders supporters hate me because I keep pointing out to them. Like today, they had NBC did another poll that said Hillary Clinton would beat Trump by 10 points, but Bernie Sanders, when he's matched up against Donald Trump, beats him by 15 points. Therefore, one can extrapolate from that that Sanders would be the stronger general election candidate. The GOP hasn't laid a finger on him yet. And I am convinced that if you get into a room where the Sean Hannitys of the world and the Mark Levins and the Rush Limbaughs and the Rance Priebuses, you know, when they get together behind closed doors, they are laughing and salivating at the possibility of a Bernie Sanders nomination. They will rip him apart. He will be Che Guevara meets Fidel Castro, and there ain't a damn thing that Sanders or anyone else in the Democratic Party will be able to do about it.
That's probably pretty close to right, I think.
If you and I know that, how come all Democrats don't know that?
Well, I mean, so Gallup put out that the disapproval ratings, and I was looking at Clinton has like an 81 disapproval. Her negatives are 81. Which is
where?
Better than,
her negatives
are
81. Where
amongst Republicants?
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Okay,
Republicans. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Wow.
And so, but then the opposite of that is Trump's in his negatives with Democrats are in the mid 70s. So he's disliked. There are more Democrats that like Trump than there are the Republicans that like Clinton. But right now, Sanders is only like 50 something. So
because
that's it. I think that's exactly right.
They don't know him yet.
Then that's exactly it. It's because they've been laying off, and everybody already has an opinion about Hillary. Like you can make the fanciful argument that maybe Sanders will be able to pull in some independents. Maybe he'll do the Obama thing and create new voters out of magical air. But Clinton will not, I don't think. I think that everybody who's on board is almost already on board, and then the Democrats who aren't on board will sigh and then join her if Sanders loses. But I don't think she's going to create the magical new voter that Sanders or Obama could.
The potential for Sanders to create new voters is stronger. That's true. But I'm sorry I interrupted. I do want to hear from the Republicans in the room. What are your thoughts? Who do you think the Republicans would want to run against?
I think it depends on who the nominee is.
Really?
I mean, you know, the opportunity to have the Clinton conversation of a recycled campaign is nullified if Bush is our candidate. So any Republican except Jeb Bush to run against Hillary, or I think Bernie would be our better bet to run someone against to win.
Wait, could you clarify that? Who do you think would be the weaker Democratic candidate?
I think the weaker Democratic candidate would be Bernie.
Okay. And DJ?
Go ahead, Emily, if you want to go.
What I was trying to say, though, is that, you know, the opportunity to attack the political dynasties gets nullified on either side with the Bush-Clinton, you know, setup, though.
Okay.
Hillary's weaknesses would be personal. Hillary's weaknesses would be more about herself and her record in terms of what she has done or what she hasn't done. Bernie would be more an ideal campaign about what he thinks and what he wants and where he wants his country to go. My first instinct would say that, yeah, of course Bernie would be a weaker candidate because I know his actual record. I know what he did as mayor of Burlington. I know some of the things he said or did beforehand. But then I remember Bill de Blasio, who had some of the same nuttiness that that Sanders had, and he managed to fool the voters of New York once.
Yeah, but that's New York, and that's a mayoral race.
Yeah, but Bill, let's face it, Bill de Blasio was also the first Democratic nominee to get elected mayor of New York in 25 years.
But it's New York City, and it's a mayoral race.
I get that it is New York City. My point is that anybody can win an election once. And while my first instinct would be to say yes, Bernie is the weaker candidate. Bernie has a lower floor than Hillary does, but Bernie would also have a higher ceiling than Hillary does. I'm not saying he gets that ceiling. Voters who are not tied to either party, particularly younger voters who don't know the Soviet Union like you and I do, Kevin, the arguments that you and I make may not click with them. And on the Democratic side, they're not clicking with them. If memory serves, anywhere between a third to a half of Democrats, depending upon your poll, on the poll you're reading, actually have a positive view of socialism. They don't know it the way we do, Kev. They just don't.
And my response to that would be, you know, I hear a lot of talk about millennials, and even my son, who just turned 18, just today was telling me, Dad, you have no idea how everyone I know is for Bernie. But millennials are just one demographic. They do not vote with any consistency. They are not a reliable voting demographic. And even if they do turn out in better numbers than they have, even for Barack Obama, that has to offset a lot of other constituencies that may not be there for Sanders. And while I will acknowledge that, you know, those of us who are over 40, and in my case, so far over 50 that it's not even funny, those of us that do know why socialism has become a dirty word in the United States, those voters vote very reliably. And, you know, he's going to just be caricatured as an angry, grumpy old man. For the people that maybe give him a pass on the socialism, there'll be something else they tag him with. You know, these are all good arguments, and we're all guessing. Look, I have no crystal ball. But this idea of like, well, Hillary is at 50% negativity, and how can you get elected when 50% of the country doesn't like you? Remember what they said about Obama's approval ratings. Well, he couldn't be reelected if he was underwater on approval ratings. And he proved that wrong.
He proved it wrong by getting himself back above water.
Okay. And who's to say that she doesn't go back into the, you know, 55% approval?
No dispute there. That's the thing people forget about. That's the thing people forget. People forget about approval, disapproval, favorable, negative,
exactly.
Favorable, unfavorable. They can change.
And they can change dramatically, and they can change almost without any reason. Donald Trump at the beginning of this thing had like a 67% disapproval rating. Now it's somewhere around 35% of the Republican Party. So let's
get to the Republicans here. The Republicans had their last debate before Iowa. Emily, who's your guy? Who's your winner?
Okay, so let me go ahead and preface this with I'm supporting John Kasich. However, I think the big winners in the debate were obviously Rubio. I think did very, very well. I think that Trump and Cruz were a sideshow. I don't think they did any damage. I think Cruz actually helped himself to try to put away the birther argument to a degree. And I think that Jeb Bush didn't do any harm, but I wasn't impressed.
Yeah, essentially it was nobody really moved the needle in any real direction. So it was the same campaign after the debate that it was then same campaign after the debate as it was before the debate, which is a problem for essentially everybody not named Cruz, Trump, or Rubio, which means Chris Christie has essentially 3 weeks to break out. Jeb Bush has 3 weeks to break out. John Kasich has 3 weeks to break out. Sorry to say,
the only way these guys are breaking out is with El Chapo.
Well, you, like I said, usually, and again, you know, just because something has always happened before doesn't mean it'll happen again. Usually someone surprises in Iowa and gets attention. Pat Robertson did it in 1988. Alan Keyes did it in 2000. Lamar Alexander did it in 1996. Of course, none of them won the nomination. But the Trump Cruz Rubio story has now been out there for so long that it may be that come Iowa caucus goers or New Hampshire voters a week later say, you know, we want somebody else in the conversation. They may very well do that. We'll just have to actually wait and see what happens. I think the thing to remember, though, is that the thing to watch is, well, I mean, it's going to be Trump. It's going to be where he is in Iowa and where he is in New Hampshire, not whether he wins or loses New Hampshire, but what percentage he actually gets in New Hampshire. Because if he wins with only 25% of the vote, that's less than what Pat Buchanan got in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And Buchanan flared out.
Good point.
That's going to be where Trump is something we're going to watch. And again, he's going to end up going up against the expectations game in South Carolina because it is presumed that he is simply going to clean up there. So if he ends up doing badly, even a Pyrrhic victory in South Carolina could put him in big trouble going into Nevada and out to the big regional primaries that are upcoming.
You know, I find it very interesting, actually. So the newspaper endorsements are starting to roll. And, you know, obviously I'm very excited because Kasich was endorsed, I believe, by The Telegraph, The Daily Democrat, and the Portsmouth Herald. And Chris Christie was endorsed by the Union Leader.
Right.
So those are all, you know, very prominent endorsements. But I don't think it says as much about those candidates as it does is an anti-Bush or an anti-Trump endorsement. Mm-hmm. It's not about the people that they chose, more so than it is about the people that they didn't.
Well, Trump and Bush are yesterday's men, and I've said that before. Donald Trump is running a campaign from a campaign straight out of a 1980s barroom. It just happens to be 2016, so it seems new and fresh to so many people. And Jeb Bush is trapped in 1995.
Well, so in your opinion, DJ, what position do you think? Is it top three? Is it top five? In New Hampshire and Iowa to keep momentum going, who has to drop if they don't finish in the top three or five?
I would say, first of all, I would say Cruz, Trump, and Rubio have to remain in the top three or they're mortally wounded. And I think they, and this is in Iowa, and I think they will. I think Bush, Christie are clearly betting on New Hampshire. I think everybody else will be gone after Iowa because there'd be no point to it. Bush, Kasich, or Christie, they have to get into the top three. Actually, they don't have to get into the top three because Cruz really hasn't paid much attention in New Hampshire. He's done something. Bush, Kasich, or Christie have to beat Cruz and Rubio in New Hampshire if they want any validity for their campaigns coming out of New Hampshire. Otherwise, there's no point.
Move on to the Democratic primary real quick, guys. So what is the group consensus on who has to win New Hampshire and Iowa for the Democrats, or how long do you see this dragging out?
I don't think it's a has to for Hillary Clinton, because the story is that she doesn't have to. I think that it's looking like Sanders is going to maybe squeak them both out. But the story is already out there that that's fine with Hillary because then she'll do better later. So I don't know. That's sort of what I'm seeing. I think that if he wins them both, it's not really going to derail her. It'll just make it be a longer race, right?
I take a little different point of view on that. I think if Hillary wins Iowa by more than 2 points, I think she's going to walk to the nomination. She's going to lose New Hampshire, and then she's going to start racking up wins. If, however, Bernie can really come in a close second or first in Iowa and then, you know, has his political way with her in New Hampshire, I think we're in for a very long slog. And frankly, it's not inconceivable that her campaign falls apart. I don't predict it, but I don't rule it out.
I would say Bernie has to win either Iowa or New Hampshire.
Definitely.
And let's forget Hillary. Hillary actually recovered in New Hampshire and beat Obama's 8 years ago.
Yes.
But I think Bernie has to win one of those. If he wins both of them, and that's an if, then Hillary has to win South Carolina. If Bernie sweeps the first three,
oh, then it's over.
I don't think Hillary recovers, because South Carolina is a state that she should crush him on. If Bernie can win South Carolina, it means he can break. He's broken every firewall that she has.
Right. Well, it also by that point means that he's attracted some minorities that he's not attracting right now.
I would bet a lot that there is no way Bernie can win South Carolina.
The scenario that I see is that he's starting to have some prominent African-American support, and it's not sort of in the traditional, you know, Black caucus arena. It's Cornel West and Killer Mike. You know, he's pulling it from a different community in the African-American community. And I think that if he gets attention that way, he doesn't have to go up huge numbers. He just has to show that he's credible. You know,
Jonah, real quick, explain to the listeners who Killer Mike is, please.
Well, he's
explain it to me.
Well, he's a rapper. He's a, you know, he's got some street cred. He might be the hip hop version of Cornel West. You know? So he's like, okay. He's a smart guy who has street credibility and will get a different sort of attention than the professional African-American community support that Hillary Clinton has got. So if that somehow allows Sanders to kind of, and it doesn't have to be a 50-50 split, if he just gets...
If he gets 35 or 40% of the black vote,
yeah,
he can more that will more than offset the fact that he's going to win a big portion of the white vote and maybe do well with women.
So just so we can add into our comedy hour, I want to tag up what Jonas said about Killer Mike, because I want to tell everyone how he decided he was going to support Bernie.
Great.
And I quote, he decided he was going to support Bernie after rolling a joint and reading his tweets.
Well, that's how I came to my Clinton decision.
Well, whatever works for you. I'm behind you 110%.
I think that there are some supporters of Huckabee and Santorum that might have had a dubious come to candidate moment as well.
A dubious doobie come to candidate moment?
You know what mind-blowing thing I learned actually recently about Trump is he doesn't drink.
That's right.
I did not realize you could be so insane and not drink a drop of alcohol.
Can I say the biggest moment for me in the Republican debate was I had this bizarre moment. You know, his thing about keeping all of the Muslims out of the country, right? I had this weird out-of-body experience where I realized how somebody could pitch me that program and have it make sense. And it was completely bizarre. It was
how would it make sense?
Was involved?
So here's how I think it can work. And maybe this is what he means, and he's just a really bad communicator. If you win the election, in the couple of months you have before the inauguration, you say it is a priority to fix our immigration system. And you guys have 3 months to get me a plan. And if it's not ready by the time I take office, I'm going to shut it down until we have been able to figure out how to vet people. I, as a voter, would say, oh, okay, that's a plan. And then you sort of leave out the Muslim thing, but you go with the rest of the plan. And it suddenly becomes this weird, like, oh, yeah, oh, sure, that makes sense. And even if in your heart you're like, we're going to get the Muslims, as long as you don't tell me, I might not know.
Sort of the way that they use the voter ID to stop other certain groups of people from voting. Anyway,
maybe.
The idea that Donald Trump can somehow scare 535 members of Congress into doing something that they haven't been able to figure out how to do for 30 years is utterly laughable. It shows that he thinks Congress is just a boardroom. Congress is not a boardroom.
Right.
And if, God help us, he is actually elected president of the United States, he will learn that, and he will learn it the hard way. And what worries me is that this president's rather extensive use of executive orders has essentially created a platform that Trump can use to continually do end runs around Congress and use our equivalent of the Cybernats mob to back him up. And that's really problematic.
You know, Trump reminds me, and I'm going to use a movie reference. I'm sure you guys have all seen the movie Legally Blonde with Reese Witherspoon. Trump reminds me of when Reese Witherspoon gets into college in the movie Legally Blonde, and she looks around and she goes, I got to do Harvard. Like, it's hard. That's like what Trump is saying with getting into the presidency. I don't think he realizes, like DJ saying, the gravity of how you get Congress to function, and they're not going to bend to your threats or your intimidation.
By the way, that same message could be said to Bernie Sanders.
Yeah,
very true.
It's actually
not that is not incorrect. Kevin, and I'm sorry.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
But it also reminds us, you know, people talk about how transformative, for good or ill, the Reagan administration was. People forget Ronald Reagan very assiduously courted Democrats who agreed with him on this, that, or the other issue.
Absolutely.
There was one situation: the Senate Democratic Caucus held a retirement party for Mike Mansfield, I think it was. And they, you know, they did the whole thing. They unveiled the portrait and everything, and everyone was tearing up. And you know, who just happens to be walking down the hall but the president, President Reagan, and he knocks on the door and he says, you know, that's a great picture of Senator Mansfield. I really admire and respected him, and I hope you'll quickly confirm him because I nominated him as ambassador to Japan, and it's good seeing you again. And he walks out the door and goes back to the White House. And that, you know, that's what Reagan did in a way that we haven't, that I haven't really seen presidents of either party do since he left. You know, take the party, you know, yes, as the president, you are leading one party, but look, find the folks in the other party that happen to agree with you on something. Reach out to them and show everyone you're reaching out to them.
So we're probably about out of time, but I did want to say who I decided to get behind for the Republicans.
Oh.
This is the first time that I've asked myself this question, because usually when I pick a candidate that I like, whether I want to vote for him or not, just if I like them, it has to do with like personality or maybe we agree on issues or something. And this Republican field was the first time where the primary question for me was, do they understand this job? Are they able to do this job? And that question disqualified many of them for me. But that combined with the story, DJ, you just told about Reagan being able to reach across party lines is why I think I'm going to be one of Christie's cheerleaders. There's just something about his ability to be the governor of a blue state and to show that he can actually work with Democrats. And I believe that he actually does understand, whether I agree with what he wants to do or not, I don't think he'll screw up from not knowing what the presidency is.
You know, Chris Christie always tells us how he's been able to work with Democrats in New Jersey. Have you ever heard a New Jersey state legislator say anything kind about Chris Christie? Because I think that he's created this out of whole cloth.
Also, Kevin, 4 years ago, there are a lot of Democrats who were – 2 years ago, there are a lot of Democrats who would say yes, Chris Christie works well with Democrats. I think now they would more say Chris Christie works on Democrats very well.
Yes.
Because a lot of them frankly feel fooled by him.
Kevin, who's your favorite Republican?
Well, this is going to be
– He has one?
Yeah. Here's the thing. I got it. I hope that Donald Trump gets the nomination because three reasons. First of all, I think he's beatable. Secondly, it would be just mind-bogglingly entertaining. But thirdly is, I don't believe that Donald Trump is the conservative that he's painting himself as. And while my preference would be to have a Democrat in the White House, and I'm sure a lot of things wouldn't go my way in a Trump presidency, I think a lot of things would go our way. I think we'd get more moderate Supreme Court justices. I think he is less likely to attack Planned Parenthood and try to take away a woman's right to choose. So I know it's crazy, but I dislike the policies and the personalities of the others so much that I would be willing to risk the United States under the control of Donald Trump.
That's amazing.
I know.
That's amazing.
I can't believe I said it. I'm going to take a lot of grief for it from my girlfriend and other friends that I have, but yeah.
All right. I think that does it, where the Democrats endorse Donald Trump and we move on. We've got another week or so before the caucus. Do we have two more shows?
Yes.
Two more shows before the Iowa caucus. So thanks everybody for listening to the More Perfect Union podcast. Look for us on Facebook, look for us on the internet, and find us in your hearts. So thanks very much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.